Thank you so much for joining us today. You're listening to Corrieton Cast, the official podcast of Corrieton Church.
Does the Bible support the principles of capitalism or something else? Through biblical examples, Dr. Rocky Ramsey explains how our decisions impact our lives, how wealth is never condemned, and how helping others aligns with God's will, if they're willing to help themselves.
In a few weeks, here in our country, we'll be electing people to national offices, including the presidency. It's possible that the difference between the two candidates and the two parties has never been more pronounced. And as almost always is the case, Christians don't have a perfect candidate. We just don't. So therefore, we've got to figure out which candidate represents the values that we hold dear the most. The question begs to be asked, does the Bible speak about issues that the candidates debate? And to some degree, yes, it does. I'll be speaking on those kind of topics this morning and next Sunday morning. In this election year, both parties claim that if the other party wins the presidency, it will be the end of democracy. Our democracy is clearly laid out in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The demise of our democracy is getting away from those things, which we've been doing for the last 4 years, at least trying to. One party supports those documents while the other party considers them to be in need of change. One supports a central government that's large, that regulates and controls most of everything. The other, a lesser government that with less control over citizens. One party seeks to move our country more and more towards socialism. The other wants to keep it a country of capitalism. America was built on the economic system called capitalism. In capitalism, opportunities provided and people are able to determine their own outcomes. Individuals are responsible for their own lives and freedoms abound. In socialism, which is kind of a soft communism, the government takes money from those away from those who work and gives it to those who don't work, even to those who won't work. In socialism and communism, the government becomes responsible for people's lives. Freedoms diminish and eventually disappear. Does the Bible endorse any of these economic models? And the answer is a resounding yes. The supposed goal of socialism and communism is equity, which means that everyone has the same outcome. The goal of capitalism is equality, which means everyone has the same opportunity. So for example, I had the same equality means that I had the same opportunity to play in the NBA as Michael Jordan. Equality also means I don't get to, right? Equity means I do get to play in the NBA because he got to play in the NBA. And therefore, not to let me play in the NBA would be discriminatory, since the equity's goal is equal outcomes. You see how absurd that is? Not many of us would be watching the NBA much anymore, would we? Is capitalism biblical? As you'll see in today's message, it in fact is. So what does it say in your outline? Number one, I've got to kind of build us through this argument. Number one, God has given man freedom of choice. He's given man freedom of choice. Under that, four things. One, angels had freedom to choose. God made angels with the freedom to choose. One third of them chose to rebel on God, led by an angel by the name of Lucifer that we know is Satan and the devil. But they had choices, and they had consequences of those choices. Number two, Adam and Eve had freedom of choice. God created men with free wills. He could have created robots. He could have programmed us all to do exactly what he wants to do, but he didn't want that. He wanted us to have a relationship. You can't have a relationship if somebody doesn't have an option to be in it or out of it. As you know, Adam and Eve chose sin over righteousness and God's will for their lives. Everything that's broken in our world is a result of that choice. That's pretty heavy, isn't it? Number three, we have freedom to choose. This morning, you chose to come to church. Other people chose not to. God has given us this same kind of freedom that he gave the angels to Adam and Eve. You can follow him or not. You can love God or you can hate God. You can obey God or you can disobey him. You get to choose. So Joshua said in Joshua 24, verse 15, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve. It'd be a pretty silly thing to say if people didn't get to choose, wouldn't it? If you're paying attention, freedom is a really big deal to God. And here's the fourth thing. Our choices have consequences. Our choices have consequences. From front to back, the Bible is a book about choices and consequences. I do another message on this, and I say that the first lesson Adam and Eve were taught, you can argue, is the most important lesson they were taught. And that is that choices have consequences. They had the freedom to choose. They didn't have the freedom to pick their consequences. So the Bible, front to back, is a book about choices and consequences. Those who choose to obey get blessed. Those who disobey suffer consequences. Those who make good decisions prosper. Those who make bad decisions suffer. Follow Jesus and you spend eternity in heaven. Decide not to follow Jesus, you spend eternity in hell. Our choices have consequences. Look at these verses there in your outline. Deuteronomy 30, 15 says, I've set before you today life and prosperity. Those are the good choices. And death and adversity. That's what happens with the bad choices. Verse 19, Moses tells them, choose life in order that you may live. Galatians 6, 7, do not be deceived. Whatever man sows, this he will also reap. You make your choice, and the choice determines your consequences. I'll say this twice. It's biblical for a person to reap what he has sown. If someone sows much, he should reap and have much. If someone sows little, it's biblical for that person to reap and have little. I'm going to say it again. It's biblical for a person to reap what he has sown. If someone sows much, he should reap and have much. And if someone sows little, it's biblical that that person should reap and have little. Doesn't sound like the equity at all, does it? It isn't wrong that one has more than the other. It's biblically right. Why? Because he's sown more. Choices have consequences. It's God's way. It's always been God's way. It'll always be God's way. So first of all, God has given man freedom. Number two, God has given man responsibility for himself. He's given man responsibility for himself. So in Romans 14, 12, it tells us each one of us will give an account of himself to God. The only person I will give an account of in heaven is me. I won't give an account for my wife, for my children, for my grandchildren, just for me. I'll give an account of myself. According to God's word, each person is responsible for his own life, not somebody else, not the government, not the church. Look at what it says in 1 Timothy 5:8. If anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Families are responsible for their families. Somebody else is not responsible for their family. The government is not responsible for their family. Neither is the church responsible for their family. The verses prior to this one give the adult children responsibility to care for their widowed mothers. That's the adult children's job, like I did with my mom. It's not the government's job. It's not somebody else's job. It's not church's job. I'm responsible for me and mine. You're responsible for you and yours. To forsake that responsibility, according to this verse, makes a person worse than an unbeliever. That's quite the condemnation, isn't it? Under that, number one, the Bible never teaches that everyone has the same opportunity. The Bible never teaches everyone has the same opportunity. It's not reality. You hear me say this all the time. We have a real God who gave us a real Bible that really works in the real world. So what God says is always true. And one thing true is everybody doesn't have the same opportunity, do they? I was born poor in Inskip. I wasn't born a Haslam, okay? I did not have the same opportunity as a Haslam. But in America, I had opportunity, didn't I? Just not the same. I've got two things under this. Number one, God chooses who he uses. I'm going to give you spiritual examples of this. God chooses who he uses. So in 1 Corinthians 12:5, says there are varieties of ministries. In other words, lots of things people can do. Verse 18, God has placed the members in the body just as he desired. There's lots of things people can do. God decides who he wants to do what. So for example, Abraham and his descendants were chosen to birth Israel. Noah and his family was chosen to build the ark and replenish mankind, restart mankind. Joseph was chosen to save Israel, who ultimately saved the Messiah, our Savior Jesus. Moses was chosen to deliver Israel out of slavery. Joshua was chosen to lead Israel into the promised land. David was chosen by God to be a king. Certain men were chosen to be prophets. John the Baptizer was chosen to be the forerunner to Messiah. 12 men were chosen to be with Jesus. Three of those men, Peter, James, and John, were a part of his inner circle. So they're the only ones with him on the Mount of Transfiguration and further in the Garden of Gethsemane. Paul was chosen to be an apostle to the Gentiles. Peter was chosen to be the apostle to the Jews. Now here's the point. Nobody else was chosen to do those things. It was their opportunity. It was their responsibility. It wasn't the opportunity or responsibility of anybody else. God chooses who he uses. Now, also under that, number two, God chooses how he uses who he uses. He chooses how he uses who he uses. Under that, number one, we have different gifts. All of us have different gifts and abilities. Romans 12, 6 says we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us. 1 Corinthians 12, 4 says there are varieties of gifts, different kinds of gifts. Verse 11, the Spirit distributing to each one individually just as he wills. So not only are there different gifts, God chooses which gifts we get. We're all different. God created us to be different. There are some things that I'm good at that you're probably not so good at. And there are things that you're good at that I'm probably not so good at. It's not wrong for us to have different opportunities and abilities. As I hope you're seeing, right? It's biblical. Now, also under that, we had number two, we have different giftedness, different gifts, and different giftedness. So 1 Corinthians 12:6, there are varieties of effects, results, but the same God who works all things in all persons. Varieties of effects. In other words, you and I might be good at the same thing, but you might be better at it than I am. And God intended it to be that way. That's not an accident. It's the way God wanted it to be. I have leadership gifts, but there are other people who have leadership gifts that are probably better than mine. I have the gift of being able to understand the Bible, make it clear, and apply it to life. There are other people who have the gift to do that probably far better than me. The bad news is, if you want to call it bad news, I can't be Adrian Rogers. The good news is, I'm not supposed to be. I was never supposed to be. I'm supposed to be me. I'm supposed to be the best me that I can be. That's the person God made me to be. He didn't make me to be Billy Graham or Adrian Rogers or anybody else you want to put on a list. Your job is to be the best you you can be. Let me say this. When it comes to God's will and happiness, what I'm about to tell you is about the most important thing I can tell you. Your greatest fulfillment is found being you. Your greatest fulfillment is found being you. You can be incredibly fulfilled being the best you. That's the person God made you to be. Too many of us want somebody else's life. And we think, if I had his life, if I had his job, had his spouse, had his kids, had his money, had his whatever, hell, his looks or her looks, whatever it might be. We tend to think if we had somebody else's life, we would be happier. You could never be happy with their life because you weren't made for their life. You can be completely happy with your life if you'll live it well because that's the life you were made for. This makes sense? And the way you miss God's best is wanting the life somebody else has. And so you overvalue what you think they have, and then you undervalue what God has given you and the fulfillment you can have if you would just be you. How many of you know somebody that on the veneer looks like they've got the life, but you know them, and under the veneer, they got problems, problems, problems. There's all kinds of those. You know, you want to be famous, really? Really? That's the last thing on earth I want to be. I don't even like it when I go out in public and people say, "You're Rocky, aren't you?" I'd like to be anonymous, not famous. So God chooses how he uses who he uses. We have different giftedness. Your best happiness is found in being the you that God made you to be, not being someone else that God never intended you to be. Here's the deal. You can't have their life, but you can sure fail to enjoy yours if you want theirs. That's some good stuff. Number two, the Bible never teaches that everyone will or is supposed to have the same things. You don't find this anywhere in the Bible. Everyone can know the Lord. Everyone can fulfill God's purpose for his life. Everyone can have his needs met. Everyone can live an abundant life. But this does not mean that everyone will have the same financial status. In the parable of the talents, the owner of the money, called talents in one of the Gospels, is God. And he gives different amounts to different people according to their abilities. And when you get to the end of the parable, not only that, he gives more to the guy who had the most. Isn't that interesting? The one who had more ended up with even more. Nowhere in the Bible does it teach that everyone should have the same amount of money or things. In fact, the Bible teaches that some should have more and some should have less. Jesus said this, you don't think much about it, but let it sink in. You'll always have the poor with you. You know what that means? Nobody will ever fix poverty. Ain't gonna happen. You can draw it on paper and think it's a wonderful idea, but you can't fix it. If you can, Jesus was wrong. You'll always have the poor with you. The Bible never teaches everyone's supposed to have the same things. Under that, I've got four subpoints. Number one, the Bible never condemns wealth or commends poverty. It never condemns wealth or commends poverty. If you read your Bible, there's nothing wrong with having money, even being rich. Here's a list of rich people in the Bible. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, David, Solomon, Job, who's the best man on the planet apparently at the time. Barnabas was well-to-do. He had land. He was a landowner. Sold some, gave the proceeds to the church, if you recall. In Luke 8:1-3, you discover that there were these wealthy women who traveled with the 12 and paid for all their living expenses. Jesus didn't go around saying, "We have no place to sleep. Well, let me snap my fingers. We'll have a hotel here." Didn't happen. He did feed the 5,000, but he didn't go around turning stones into bread everywhere he went. So how did they eat? Where did they stay? They had some wealthy women. It gives their names there. That took care of all that. Proverbs 13:22 says that a good man leaves an inheritance not just to his children, but to his children's children. The Old Testament's full of promises that God will prosper the righteous. Ecclesiastes 7:14 says, tells us to be happy when we prosper, rejoice. In 1 Timothy 6:17, it tells us that God richly supplies us with all things, watch this, to enjoy. You're supposed to enjoy the things God blesses you with. In Ephesians 4:28, which we'll look at in a moment, it tells us there that we're to earn more than we need because some people earn less than they need, and you're going to need to help them. Get to that here in a moment. Money, it's only a problem when the money has you. It's not carnal to be wealthy, and it's not spiritual to be poor. God provides for some naturally. They work for it. They earn it. Maybe they inherit it. He provides for others supernaturally, unnaturally. So they kind of get miracles. Why? Because they don't have anything. When I was young and had nothing, I have all kinds of stories of how God provided. But as I got older and had a job, there are less of those miracle stories, right? Because God's chosen the poor of this world to be rich in faith. They get to see the miracles. One of my college buddies, he grew up with money. He used to go snow ski every winter and they had a cabin on the lake and a boat and all this stuff. Yeah, I had nothing. And we became real good friends in college. And I went through this time where I resented him for it. He had a dad. I didn't have a dad. And I had to work my way through that. My life is so much better than his. I'm so much happier than him. Things have turned out so much better for me than they have him. Isn't that interesting? Listen, where you start doesn't have to determine where you finish. Where you start doesn't have to determine where you finish. That's one of the beautiful things about God, and it's a beautiful thing about capitalism. In Deuteronomy 8:18, it says that God is our source no matter how we may have gotten what we have. She gets a Social Security check. I'm drawing these days, okay? God is the source of that. You get a paycheck, God is the source of that. You get an insurance check, God is the source of that. You're drawing down your IRA, God is the source of that. He's the source of all our wealth. And he provides for us in different ways at different times throughout our lives. So the Bible doesn't condemn wealth or commend poverty. Number two, the Bible recognizes that some will outwork others. The Bible recognizes some people outwork others. Proverbs 10:4. Poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. 21:17. He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. Matthew 10:10, Luke 10:17, and 1 Timothy 5:18 all say, watch this, that the worker, the laborer, is worthy of his wages. I'll say it again. He's worthy of his wages. He's not worthy of anybody else's wages. And nobody else is necessarily worthy of his wages. The worker is worthy of his wages. I may not be worthy of yours. You may not be worthy of mine. God's plan was never for everybody to earn the same amount of money, but for everybody to earn what he earns. What he earns. That's capitalism. Number three, the Bible recognizes that some will manage better than others. The Bible recognizes some will manage better than others. Proverbs 21:20, there is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but the foolish man swallows it up. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. Some people manage money real well. I'm one of those people. Some people don't. They can go through all kinds of money. They can make all kinds of money. Used to be a guy named Ron Blue wrote a book on he was kind of the Dave Ramsey before Dave Ramsey. I think it's called Master Your Money. And in that, he talked about a surgeon who was making $1.2 million a year and had a negative cash flow. She had nothing to do with how much money he was making. It had to do with how poor managers he and his wife were. It's been reported that 94% of people remain in the same financial class they were born into. This is true even though they may earn more than their parents and inherit money from their parents. Isn't that interesting? So how do they stay in the same class? Because they don't manage well. It's biblical for good decisions to get rewarded and for bad decisions to cost the people who make them. So you may say, well, I feel so sorry for him. He's in such a bad place. How did he get there? He made such terrible decisions. Well, that's biblical. Yeah, maybe you're sad about it, but he's reaping what he sowed. That's biblical. You see this illustrated in the parable of the virgins in Matthew 25:1-13. Now, write this down if you can. This is something, if you make a list of 5 or 10 things that are true in the world, I'm telling you, this is one of them. Here you go. You ready? People who don't have money spend money on things that people with money would never buy or spend money on. People who don't have money will spend money on things that people with money would never spend money on. People with money look at people who don't have money and see things they do with their money and go, no wonder they don't have any money. Am I in the right room? That is truer than the nose on your face, I'm telling you. Number four, the Bible teaches that heaven will be different for people based on their rewards. It's going to be different for people based on their rewards. We don't get a real clear picture of that, but we get enough to understand this. It's a capitalism kind of a system. You may have put your thinking cap on for this one. Communism is a lie that everybody will have the same. It's just not true. Do you think the average person in Russia is living like Putin? No. Do you remember when the war started and around the world, free countries started freezing the assets of Russian oligarchs? Oligarch is a word that means filthy rich, okay? Filthy rich Russians. Well, how could they be filthy rich Russians in communism? Because communism has two classes, the haves and the have-nots, and they're obviously the ones that have. In capitalism, opportunity is offered and everyone gets what he earns. In socialism, somebody doesn't get all that he earns and somebody else gets what he never earned. Thomas Sowell asked this question, what exactly is your fair share of what someone else worked for? What's your fair share of what someone else worked for? What's my fair share of Jeff Bezos's wealth? And let me explain this in case you don't know this. Jeff Bezos is one of the richest men in the world, right? He's the guy that owns Amazon. Okay. How many of you are poor because he's rich? Now, you might be because you're stupid and you buy stuff you shouldn't buy, okay? I buy all kinds of things from Amazon. I just bought a bunch of marker boards for the children's department from Amazon. Just an easy way to do it. But you know what? It didn't cost me a penny for him to be a billionaire. And it hadn't cost you a penny. He didn't take that money from you. If he got any of your money, you gave it to him, right? That's true with all those people. Rich people don't steal from the poor. Rich people lift the poor. You can go study all over the world. Thomas Sowell's written volumes on this. But when people do well, they lift societies. So where's the economy best, in America with all of our millionaires and billionaires, or in Zimbabwe, where the government can't even feed its soldiers? But see, some people try to think, and Democrats try to make people think, well, the reason you don't have anything is because they have so much. That has nothing to do with it. They didn't take money out of your pocket. If they got any money, had anything to do with you, you gave it to them. You gave it to them. And you know what people with money do? They create jobs. And you know what they do when you raise taxes on them? They hide their money. They've done it for hundreds of years. They know how to do it. You know, Kamala thinks she's going to tax the rich and get all this money. No, she's not. What she's going to do is take money out of the economy. It's happened over and over and over. The only thing we learn from history is we don't learn anything from history. We don't. The spiritual economic system, if you will, in heaven will not be communism where everybody's the same. It will not be socialism where you get what somebody else earned. It'll be capitalism where you enjoy the reward for what you worked for. Listen to all these verses. Jeremiah 17:10. I, the Lord, give to each man according to his ways, according to the result of his deeds. Matthew 16:27, Jesus, I will repay every man according to his deeds. 2 Corinthians 5:10, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Revelation 2:23, God says, I will give to each one of you according to your deeds. Revelation 22:12, my reward is with me to render to every man according to what he has done. In the book of Philippians, people who had given to the Lord, Paul was told them in Philippians 4:17, not that I seek the gift itself, but I seek the profit that increases to your account. So they gave to his missionary journeys, and it increased their account. Where? At the First Bank of Corinth? No, in heaven. In heaven. heaven will not be glorified communism where everybody gets the same and gets issued the standard white robe, set of wings, harp, and a halo. It's not what it's going to be. Every person in heaven will reap what he sowed while on earth. Some will have laid up great treasure in heaven. Some will have not. That's why the Bible says some will be first and some will be last. This will not be an inequity for it to be that way. Equality of outcome was never God's goal. It never was. It'll be as God intended for be. Good and right behavior rewarded. Bad decisions, a price paid. So God's given man freedom of choice. He's given man responsibility for himself. And then number three, God has given man responsibility to, not for, others. He's given man responsibility to, not for, others. We are not responsible for other people, but sometimes we're responsible to them. Parents have responsibilities to their children, but they're not ultimately responsible for their adult children. You say, my adult children doing bad financially. That's their problem. They're reaping what they sow. It's not your job to fix it. They're not your responsibility now. They're theirs. As your pastor, I have responsibilities to you, but I have no responsibility for you. I can tell you how to walk with the Lord, but I'm not responsible whether you do it or not. I can tell you how to have a great marriage, raise great kids, but I'm not responsible if your kid messes up and your marriage fails. That's your responsibility. To, but not for. Under that, number one, those with more are to serve those with less. This is God's way. Those with more are to serve those with less. Luke 12:48, Jesus said, from everyone who has been given much, much will be required. This is a verse I mentioned earlier, Ephesians 4:28. He must labor so that he will have something to share with the one who has need. So in other words, God doesn't just want you to make enough money to get by. He wants you to make more than you need to get by so you can help somebody who's not getting by. Responsibility to, but not for. Historically, the weak have served the strong and the poor have served the rich. In God's plan, though, the strong serve the poor, or the weak, and the rich serve the poor. They don't take advantage of those with less. They serve them. Power and wealth are not to be used to take advantage of those who have less, but to serve them. The greatest among God's people are not the people who get served. They're the people who serve. Greatest among you will be the servant of all. It's what Jesus did. It's what we're supposed to do. So most of you know we've taken a bunch of stuff to Chucky, took a tractor trailer load up there. We'll be doing more up there. We're going to have hopefully our biggest Christmas party ever up there. Definitely be the greatest need we've ever had. We're also helping somebody we found in Newport. So why are we doing this? Because those who have are supposed to help those who have fallen into problems. None of these people deserved what happened to them, as far as we know. They just, time and chance, dealt them a bad hand, didn't it? And so some of us have more than we have to get by with, right? I mean, a bunch of you have money. Your biggest problem is going to be, what are you going to do with all that when you die? You'll leave for your children to fight over? You're going to ruin them? Well, one of the reasons God's given you what he has is so you can do something with it for somebody else. Now, it's not the government's job to take it and make you. It's your job as a Christian to realize God's blessed me with this. It's more than I need. Somebody has less than they need. I need to do something about that. So you can give to our flood relief, and we're helping this lady up there. We'll be doing other stuff up in Chucky. But why do we do that? We're not responsible for those people. But because we have, we're responsible to them. Make sense? Now, here's the second thing under that. Number two, it violates God's will to help those who will not help themselves. It violates God's will to help those who will not help themselves. Now, when the Bible talks about the poor, it's very different than the poor here in America. They were more like the people in Africa. They had no options. There was no jobs. They would be willing to work. And just like in Zimbabwe today, there are no government programs. So we send food, they eat out of the dump, or they have nothing to eat. Nobody's giving them food stamps or a welfare check or housing or medical or anything else. They have nothing. That's poor. On the other hand, many of the poor in America are people who are unwilling to work. Some of them who've made a career out of working the system. When I was in Mississippi, had a hardworking treasurer. I don't remember what he did for a living, but he was a hardworking guy. Had a daughter who married a guy that wasn't a good guy. They had a son. And one day he was trying to motivate his son to do some work. And he said, "Well, what are you going to do when you grow up?" He said, "I'm going to draw." He said, "Draw what?" He said, "I'm going to draw a check." As a kid, he's already figured this thing out. You can do nothing and get a check. So why in the world would you want to do something for a check that may not be much bigger than a check you can get for nothing? Am I in the right country? That's exactly how it works. True story. It's Chicago several years ago. This special needs adult lady came into the emergency room. So they're taking the information from her and they ask her if she has a job. She says she's the breadwinner. Well, they said, "Well, what's that mean?" Well, as they dug into it, here's what they found out. Her mother basically prostitutes her out to get her pregnant, to have babies, to get government checks. At that time, she was receiving $160,000 a year in government assistance. Why? For getting pregnant. She was the breadwinner. Why work when you can get what others work for, housing, food, medical, etc., for free? Duh. We're told how Israel used to assist the poor in Leviticus 19, 9 to 10 and 23, 22. When they would sow a field and they go back to reap it, you have a square field, they were not to reap the corners. So they'd take a circle out of the square and the crops in the corners would remain there for the poor. And the poor had to go out and do something to have something to eat. They had to go get the food, the crops, out of the corners of these fields. In Matthew 6, 26, it says that God feeds the birds of the air. Have you noticed he doesn't put the worms in their mouths? You don't see birds sitting out in the yard just open their mouth up waiting for one, God drops a worm in. No. Every animal has to work to eat. Every man is supposed to have to work to eat. Every man. It's biblical. It's God's way. It's how he intended it to be. It's right. You likely have heard the expression, "God helps those who help themselves." It's not in the Bible, but it's essentially pretty much true. Some think it's not in the Bible. It's not. God does help those who help themselves. Not only that, the Bible instructs us not to help those who do not help themselves and will not help themselves. So look at 2 Thessalonians 3:10. This verse is as true as John 3:16. If anyone is unwilling to work, he is not to eat either. Now, it doesn't say he's unable. That's a different thing. But he's unwilling to work. So what do you do with a person like that? Well, biblically, you let them starve. And essentially, one day they'll get hungry enough, they might decide a job's better than starvation. God uses need to motivate people to do what they should do. In the prodigal son story, it was his need that brought him home. If he had never hit the bottom, if he had never gotten to the point of need that he has, he'd still been where he was. He didn't go home because he thought it was a great idea. He dreaded going home. But finally, he got so desperate he had to do something. Need forced him to change. Look at Proverbs 16:26. A worker's appetite works for him, for his hunger urges him on. Talked a few weeks ago about being real men. Man, I got a wife to take care of. I got children to take care of. I remember when I was single, all I needed was gas in my tank and enough money for a rooster and a Coke at Smoky Mountain Market. Some of you have been here long enough, remember all that. Remember that chicken sandwich called a rooster. That's all I needed in the world. If I had that, I had everything I needed. Then I got married. Oh my, I got this wife I got to take care of. And then I had children. Oh my, I got these children I got to take care of. The hunger, the need, forced me to care about, to do better than I had done, to care about more than I used to care about. It's right for people to individually and collectively to help those who cannot help themselves. It is not right individually or collectively to help those who will not help themselves. That's what the Bible says. It's biblically wrong. It's a sin. It's a sin. Why? Because it encourages behavior that God condemns. It's a sin not to take responsibility for your life. It's a sin to enable somebody not to take responsibility for their own life. Taking responsibility for their life is the essence of getting to Jesus in heaven, right? You got to do something. You got to do something. Socialism and communism both pretend to make everybody the same. Instead, they divide people into two classes, the haves who have a lot and the have-nots who have almost nothing. There's never been a situation where a country turned to socialism and socialist policies and raised the level of income in its country. The best example of the latest mess of this is Venezuela. And you got all these people trying to get America. Why? Because socialism fails. How many people in Russia do you think would come to America if they could get here? And you go all across the country, all across history. It doesn't work. It's never worked. But it's kind of like, you know, in tennis, you can hit a drop shot. That's when you hit a ball that barely goes over the net and you make them run real hard. And to hit a good one and for them not to get to it is a wonderful feeling. I'm just telling you, it's a great feeling. But you know what? I've never thought that a drop shot was a bad idea. If I'd missed 100 in a row, it sounds like the next time. It's not, but it sounds like one. That's the way socialism is. It's never worked, but it sounds like such a good idea. And somebody smart as us, as caring as us, as compassionate as us, if we would be the ones directing it, then we could usher people into an economic, social utopia. It just isn't true. It just isn't true. In socialism, the poor may get a little more. Usually they don't. The elite get a lot more, the oligarchs. The common man gets a whole lot less. The middle class disappears. The government ends up owning everything and controlling everybody. Freedom's become a thing of the past. Socialism is the gateway to communism. Socialism punishes achievement. The more you earn, the more they take. It rewards responsibility. The less you do, the more they'll give you. It takes what one man earns and gives it to another man who didn't earn it. It kills initiative. It rewards laziness. The government gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it exercises more and more control over people's lives. Interesting side note. There was a time in England when the top tax rate for the highest earners topped out at, you ready for this? 95%. George Harrison wrote a song that the Beatles sang that you'll be familiar with, Taxman. And the tax man says, one for you, 19 for me. He's getting 95% of what they would make. It talks about if you sleep, I'll tax you. If you take a walk, I'll tax the street. Or no, I'll tax your feet. If it says when you die, you better be sure to declare the pennies on your eye because they'll tax you for that. That's socialism. Though socialism never worked out long term, again, those who think it will think they could do it, pull it off. In America, socialism means stripping citizens of constitutional rights. Freedom of speech is replaced with censorship, canceling dissent and dissenters, and controlling the flow of information in society. So you only know what they want you to know, and you only know what they want you to know about it. If you don't agree with a favored party's narrative, you get silenced or crushed. We've been in 4 years of this at a massive scale in America. In America, socialisms, eventually only crooks have guns. Churches eventually get regulated and likely punished for hate speech if they preach what the Bible says about abortion and gender. Borders are left wide open, and those who cross them immediately have rights to free food, housing, medical care, and more, all paid for by working Americans. And so you have millions of illegals getting all billions of dollars of benefits while we have people who are citizens right in our next door, our neighbors, who are getting almost nothing from the government. I'll tick you off. And this is funny. So in North Carolina, because Democrats are so into climate change, you know, we're going to save the planet. God damn, we'll talk about that a little bit next week. Don't miss that one. They sent a pallet of electric chainsaws to North Carolina. Isn't that caring? The only problem is they don't have electricity. How do you use an electric chainsaw and don't have electricity? Somebody said, you can't cure stupid. Unborn children continue to be aborted, even after birth. So has that happened? Yeah. A child, they meant to abort it, it's born live, and they stay there and let it die. Women who've worked in these things have written about that. They've seen it with their own eyes. With gender, mental illness gets normalized and then force-fed to those who disagree. People who didn't go to college are forced to pay off the debt of those who chose to go into debt to go to college. What's fair about that? In American socialism, the exaggerations of climate change completely restructures what you're able to purchase, use, and drive. So I mowed my yard. I used a gas trimmer, a gas weed eater. I used a gas blower. I used a gas mower. My yard looks beautiful. But if they have their way, there'll come a day where I can't use any of those. Have you ever seen one of these goobers out pushing a push mower with an electric cord on it in their yard? You might be that goober, I don't know, but anyway. You're like, poor that guy. I'm on my Skag going about 50 miles an hour trying not to wreck. Electric brownouts and blackouts occur as clean energy fails to meet the needs. We've already seen this in California. So California has to tell all their climate-saving people who drive electric cars, nothing wrong with electric car. If you want to buy me one, I'll take it. Nothing wrong with that. But so you've got all these people in California that the governor has to tell them they can't drive their cars. There's not enough electricity. Who wants one of those? Cities burn down while liberal governors and mayors do nothing to stop it. Prisoners get released early. Prisons get closed. Police get defunded. Crime escalates. Boy, don't we see that in the news every day. Good cops are seen as bad guys. People who break the law are bailed out of jail by liberal celebrities and politicians. Sound familiar? In fact, Kamala orchestrated a bunch of that. Judicial decisions get determined by politics, not laws. I'm reading the thing that Hillsdale College sent out, talks about, has several examples. One guy who owned guns, but he would have a hobby and buy guns like many of you guys do. Well, there's a license if you're doing it kind of professionally, there's a license you're supposed to have. He didn't have the license, but he didn't have to have the license. Well, somebody got their beam on him, and the Department of Justice sent somebody. So they could have just gone to his door and said, we understand you're doing this and this. You have to get one of these licenses. That's not what they did. They showed up at night with a SWAT team. He has no idea who they are. He gets his gun. There's a shootout. He's dead. They could have walked up to his door and told him what they need him to do. One person, one lady could have done that. But they showed up in the dead of night, early in the morning, with a SWAT team. Same thing happened to the guy and his son, the guy that stood outside the abortion clinic. Was that in Pennsylvania? And they showed up at his house, guns drawn, arrested him early in the morning. His wife is screaming and crying. They take her out. She's in her gown. They take her out, put her in a cop car for about 4 hours before she has any idea what's happened. Her husband's dead. Their seven kids are screaming. They could have walked up to his door. They could have sent a teenager up there with a warrant. And they showed up with guns and a SWAT team. That's socialism. It's KGB. And it's in America. And you ought to be steaming mad about it. You'll be steaming mad about it. I saw a thing yesterday that said 32 million people who call themselves Christians won't vote this year. To say nothing is to support the evil. Evil prevails, not because it's stronger, but because good men do nothing. So be a good man, be a good woman. Say, I'll vote. I may have to hold my nose to vote for Trump. I may be right there with you. But I will vote against everything I'm condemning and the Bible condemns this morning. I'll do that. Capitalism is not just a good idea, it's God's idea. The origins of capitalism are not America or Western civilization. The origins of capitalism are heaven. It's God's idea, it's God's plan. It always has been, always will be. I want to close with the words of Alexander Fraser Tyler, written in 1770. As I read this, America has now been in existence for 248 years. Quote, a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until voters discover that they can vote themselves generous gifts from the public treasury. In other words, we can vote people into office who'll give us money. Read an article in the paper this morning. If you rob Peter to pay Paul, Paul will always vote for you. If you rob Peter to pay Paul, Paul will always vote for you. He says, quote, back in the quote, from that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates, promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy. We're at $34 trillion of debt in America. And we're going to give people money for down payments on houses. We're going to give this. We're going to give that. We're going to give that. Remember, these politicians aren't giving away their money. They're giving away yours. They're giving away yours. The average age of the world's greatest civilizations has been 200 years. We're 48 past that. He said, all of these nations progress through this sequence. I'm going to read it twice to you. It's so profound. Remember, he wrote this in 1770. From bondage to spiritual faith, the birth of America. From spiritual faith to courage, the revolution. From courage, I'm adding the America and the revolution. From courage to liberty. From liberty to abundance. From abundance to selfishness. From selfishness to apathy. From apathy to dependence, there's socialism. And from dependence back into bondage. He says every one of these nations that collapsed ended up with a dictator. That's how you solve it. Get the whole world economy to collapse and you end up with a one world dictator called the Antichrist. I'll say this last thing again, I'm through. From bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to apathy, from apathy to dependence, from dependence back into bondage.
God has given us freedom of choice, responsibility for ourselves and to others. Head over to our podcast or YouTube channel to share today's message with a friend or family member who needs to hear it. A great number of you would raise your hand to say that you either stopped going to church from boredom or you're currently considering leaving your church for the same reason. Nothing ever seems to happen or change, and you're not challenged in your faith. Well, we want to invite you to experience the Coryton difference this weekend. Go to CorytonChurch.com to plan your visit. That's CorrytonChurch.com to plan your visit today.